Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to CenterPoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. In this show, we will discuss ways that we can journey to our own centers. This can help us access our inner resources to improve our physical abilities and health, our mental strength, our emotional well-being, and our spirituality. And our special guest today is Dr. John Casper, Ph.D. Welcome, John.
Well, thank you, Ron. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for appearing. I've known John for more than 20 years at this point.
Yeah.
Let me tell you a little bit about him. He has 42 years of association management experience in a wide range of areas, including leader and member interaction, policy development, membership recruitment and retention, government relations, public speaking, meeting management, staff and office management, budgeting, and statistical analysis. And from 1995 through 2021, he owned and operated Solutions for Associations Incorporated. This was an association management company. He and his staff managed multiple associations during this time, including the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis, and that's how I got to know John and his family. Dr. Casper is a published author on topics such as budget preparation and financial concepts for associations, evaluating candidates for political contributions, performance appraisals, job descriptions, job evaluation techniques for association management positions, and organizational change. So you've done an awful lot, and what I'm hoping to do in spending some time with you this morning is to learn how you performed your duties. I want to know about the psychology of people with whom you worked, both staff and associations, and because we like to talk about how people think here. So maybe we can get started, John, and you can tell us how you even got into your career, because I have a lot of older teenagers and young adults listening to the show, and they are trying to figure out what they want to do with their life. How did you get involved in association management?
Well, thank you, Ron. I've given it some thought in terms of how to best approach our discussion today, and I thought I'd take a minute or two, if it's all right with you, to talk about what an association is. Frankly, back in 1979, when I was in college, getting my baccalaureate in business administration, I had no idea what an association was. And so I thought I'd just give a little background to the power of associations and their existence in the United States, and then talk a little bit about how I got involved.
I love it.
More than 1.9 million U.S.-based organizations exist in the United States. Of those, over 90,000 were classified as 501c6 trade or professional associations. Now, that 501c6 is a reference to the IRS code under which associations are formed in the United States. We had another almost over 1.2 million classified as 501c3 charities, foundations, or religious organizations. And those are the two classifications with which I have worked the most in my professional career as an association manager. Associations employed more than 1.6 million people in all 50 states. 1.2% of the private sector workforce in the U.S. works for an association of some kind. Nearly 1 in 10 workers in Washington, D.C. are employed by an association. Their collective payroll is over $47 billion in the United States. They provide insurance and benefits coverages to their employees. They're major contributors to the meetings and printing industry in the United States. They have 30% of people who volunteer their time do so through an association. Association members are more likely than the general public to give to charities every year, which is probably part of what draws them to association work. Associations were responsible for $50 billion worth of volunteer time in the United States. They conduct research that helps their members keep pace with the global marketplace and the marketplace within the United States. They create industry certifications and standards of quality, ethics, sustainability, and social impact. Almost 1 in 10 private sector employees in the District of Columbia work for an association. So they're a large force in the United States, and frankly, I knew none of that when I started my career in association management. So back in 1979, when I was getting my baccalaureate degree in business administration, my mentor in association management, Nancy Siebold, was in a master's program at Loyola University getting her MBA in personnel administration, and we shared some common teachers between the two of us. One day, one of my teachers came into class and had a job spec for a personnel research job. And since personnel was going to be my major in school, I applied for it and got an interview with Nancy. And the position that I was interviewing for was the Legislative Employment Practices Coordinator for the American Association of Nurse Anesthetists. It is one interesting affect of associations is their titles are very long, and you need very large business cards to fit the titles for some association positions. And so as she described this position to me, it was running the legislative program for the AANA, as well as helping its members in their negotiations with hospitals and in their personnel situations. And I told her freely, I said, you know, I'm good on the personnel part. That's what my training is getting me. But I don't know what legislation, I don't know anything about legislation. And she said very, very quietly but very succinctly, well, you seem like a smart young man. You could probably learn that. And so with that, I was actually hired as the first Legislative Employment Practices Coordinator for the association. Interestingly enough, my first day of work, they sent me to a government relations workshop in Washington, D.C., at which people wanted to talk to me about, you know, H.R. 4762 and S-1215, which are designations for bills that have been introduced in the legislature. And I knew nothing about any of them. And so I learned very quickly a very good phrase to understand as you start in a new job, and that is, oh, let me get back to you on that. Let me take a look at that. And so that government relations workshop went well. Started my career with the AANA, and I worked for about 7 years with them. We actually rewrote 38 states' nurse practice acts during that time, recognizing the certified registered nurse anesthetist, which was the constituent members of our associations, which were nurses who provided anesthesia in the surgical suite. After that, I went with the American Medical Association for a little over 8 years, and I held basically three positions with them. I was a field representative for the AMA for about 2 years. I then became the first director of international medical graduates with the American Medical Association. And then for my final couple of years with them, I was the director of long-range policy analysis. All the while gathering more information about how associations worked, what the community looked like, et cetera, which we'll get to after I give a brief description of my employment situations. Following that, I was the executive director for the American Association of Physicians of Indian Origin for about 16 months. And then I became the executive director of the Society for Ambulatory Care Professionals with the American Hospital Association after that. And while I was the executive director for the Society for Ambulatory Care Professionals as a full-timer, I also started Solutions for Associations, which was the association management company to which you referred in your kind introduction. I started working full-time for Solutions for Associations in 1996 and continued to work with that association management company through February of 2021. Now, one of the things you'll note, in preparation for our discussion today, I went back and I actually counted the number of associations that I've worked with over 42 years, and it turns out that there were 10 of them, seven of which were in the healthcare industry, and three of which were not, some of which I worked with concurrently at the association management company level. And it's been an interesting and invigorating experience. I love the association community. It's a very open community. It's a very sharing community. It's not as cutthroat, if you will, as potentially corporate America can be from time to time. People are willing to share ideas and talk to you about pretty much anything, which I continued through my 42 years and acted as a mentor for many people as we were working through that as well. Basic questions that come up with associations, probably the biggest one in working with associations, is the whole question of balance. And what I mean by that is, in the association literature and in association experience, the balance of who drives the association. Is it a volunteer-driven association? Is it a staff-driven association? Or is it a balanced association with both parts equally providing input into the operation of the association? I've worked for all different kinds of associations, some of which were staff-driven, some of which were volunteer-driven. I have found that the balanced approach was really the best approach. The chief staff executives, the executive directors of associations, provide a lot of continuity for associations, but should never be mistaken that it's their association. It's always the volunteers' association. It's the membership that should drive the priorities of the association and what the association's activities are. But as I said, we as staff can provide good continuity for that. Associations have new boards basically elected every year, new committees assigned, new people on those committees. And it's really an important facet of our work as staff to try to provide some continuity and a resource for those people coming in so that they can be brought up to speed quickly in regard to the activities of the association, how things are working within the association, and so they can provide their input into what priorities should be driving the association, new developments in the industry, etc. Obviously, constitutions and bylaws are very important to associations. They're the governing documents that help provide us a framework and guidework as to how the associations work. Ways in which we have helped, we as staff have helped associations in the past, are things like creating policy manuals of past activities to provide resources to people to understand what the association has done in the past, what drives them, and what framework do we work within as we try to move those associations forward. And with that, what other questions do you have in regard to association work, Ron?
Well, I have lots of questions. The first one is, explain the difference between an association and a foundation.
Well, an association, so the typical distinction between the two, let me draw the distinction between a 501c6, which is technically a business league under the IRS code, and a 501c3, which is a charity or foundation. Typically, a business league has more business-oriented and business-driven collection of people who are trying to move an industry forward. They can do more research within the association. They can provide more guidance to their members in regard to developments within the industry. 501c3 foundations typically are tax-exempt organizations to whom you can also make tax-exempt contributions, and they typically are formed for charitable purposes, scientific research, etc. So there are two. The main distinction probably between the two, from a member's point of view, is the tax deductibility of contributions that can be made to them. You typically can't write off portions of dues that are due for legislative lobbying and thing to a 501c6. Whereas you can, in fact, write off your contribution to a 501c3 because ostensibly they're being used for charitable purposes.
Got it. Now, before we move on, I have a lot of questions about associations, and I want to talk about my experience with the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis and Association that we work with together. But you said you went into college, you got involved in personnel. How did you decide on your major? How did you even get involved in the business?
Well, when I was getting my degree, I've always liked working with people. I've liked trying to understand what motivates people, what will slow them down, what will speed them up. A degree in personnel administration at that point really helped fill in a lot of the gaps for me in terms of understanding how people think, how you can explain things to people and what makes sense to them versus what might not make sense to them. And it seemed to me that a degree in personnel administration would allow me not only to work in the human resources field, the personnel field, it had also helped round out my understanding to how to manage people better and how to be a better manager if, in fact, I was not working in the human resources field. It's also what motivated me to go on and get my MBA in personnel administration as well, again, to help fill in some of those gaps and help me better understand how to work with people.
Because I'm hoping that during this interview we're going to talk more about, you said you learned how people think. I want to hear more, pick your brain on that a little bit more. But another question on your history, you said you were the field representative for the American Medical Association at one point. What does that person do?
Well, what we did was we had states for which we were responsible. I had 17 states that I was responsible for. And if you take a piece of yarn and connect Washington State and Florida and go on either side of that line, those were pretty much the states I had. I had Washington, Oregon, Montana, Idaho, Iowa, Missouri, Georgia, Florida, Kentucky, New Jersey. I came in, people would take states as they were going through at that department within AMA, and those were the states that the person for whom I was taking over had. And what we did is we were the eyes and ears of the board and of AMA management for AMA to its constituents, its members. We did a lot of traveling. I would probably travel a couple hundred thousand miles a year to various annual meetings of state associations, meetings of county medical associations. I would provide to them what things were going on at AMA. They would provide to me what was going on in the field. I would act for them as a resource within the building. And if they had questions about certain things, I would find the right individual to talk to and put them in contact with each other. So we really were a great handshake from AMA going out to the state and county levels to try to make sure that we kept a good, close relationship with them.
So your job was to collect where they were at and report to AMA so they could take action.
Correct, and vice versa, and to report where AMA was to them as I was going through.
So I'd like to shift now to talk about the experiences we had together at ASH. And
sure.
One of the things you mentioned earlier was that boards turn over, and I know that happened at ASH, and I gather this is happening at other associations. And as you know, I actually spent maybe 10 years on the board of ASH in various roles, including as president for 1 year.
And if I might add, a very valuable participation within. You were a great board member.
I appreciate it. But what I found difficult, and I wonder if you... So the question is, was my experience... I'm going to tell you the experience, and I want to know if it was typical or not in associations, and then how would you revise the system? Because I felt when I took over as president, I'd been on the board for 3 or 4 years. I had some idea what happens. But I ran into a lot of politics in the organization, which was relatively small. I think we had 1,500 members or something when I was president.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a frustrating experience. It took me a good 6 months to sort of figure out what's happening. Right now we have a new president who used to be president before, and it's fascinating to watch him operate much more quickly now because he knows what he's doing. But in the association of ASH, I didn't know what I was doing for a while, and then by the time I figured it out, the year was over. I find that a problem because we didn't manage to accomplish as much as I wanted. Is this typical, endemic in associations? And do you have any proposed solutions?
It is. That frustration of on-the-job training, if you will, is one that has caused a lot of frustration with volunteers and associations over a period of time. What we tried to do is create resources for board members, which doesn't do much for the politics, but at least provided background in terms of past activities for the association, so that there was an understanding of what the policies were, et cetera. In terms of how to interact with board members, how to get things through a board, how to understand what people are dealing with, as you know, if you get a room of 15 people, you're going to get 15 different opinions on how things work. And thank you. Part of what some of the frustration is for associations is trying to get things through in a relatively efficient way that allows you to complete what you're doing in an efficient manner. And I don't know what the I'm getting some feedback on my computer here, and I don't know what it is. I apologize for that.
Well, you know, the good thing is we're coming up on break, so I will let you figure out what the feedback is, and then come back and pick up the discussion of what to do when there's 20 opinions among 15 people.
Wonderful.
This is Center Point with Dr. Ron Anbar.
Coming attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Anbar to be published early 2025. Dr. Anbar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Anbar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Anbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at CenterpointMedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. Special guest, Dr. John Astra, my dear friend. You know, when you had that sound before the break, I remember a time when I did a computer glitch as a president. An email was sent out to somebody it wasn't supposed to go to, and it created a lot of discomfort for that individual, and I felt very badly about it. And I called you, John. I said, "What do I do now?" Do you remember this incident?
I have a recollection of this event. Yes.
And you just told me, "Calm down."
Well, part of what we do as a staff person is to work with volunteers who to help them through those situations, because we're all human beings, and we all end up somewhere along the line doing something that we probably would have preferred not to have done.
Mistakes happen, as we learn.
They do.
So, going back to discussion of, so I know as staff, and you were very helpful, and actually when I asked for your help, you helped me a great deal. I know that some of the presidents, because I actually watched Ash for a decade, as I mentioned, didn't quite lean on you the same way. And I think the problem that I saw over the years is that not only did the president take a while to figure out what they were doing, but then they'd go back and forth against us in the American government. Trump was president. Mr. Biden came in and reversed what Trump did. Now Mr. Trump comes in and reverses what Mr. Biden did. And that's sort of like you're kind of spinning the wheel. And having been on the board for 10 years, I saw that happening three or four times. So somebody says, "Hey, I have a great idea." And I said, "We talked about this 6 years ago on a board that nobody else was on except for me and you."
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you avoid this? Is this just part and parcel of the association?
In truth, I think in part it is part and parcel of being on a volunteer board. You're going to get some repetition. You're going to get people who raise issues. And I, as you may recall, one of the things I always said when I was a staff member is just because we talked about it 6 years ago doesn't mean that this might be a better time to talk about it again. And I always hated to try to cut people off by saying, you know, we talked about this, but rather try to talk about here's the reasons why we didn't do that at that point in time. And it may take 5 minutes to do that or 10 minutes to do that. But then you've given people a context for why their opinion is appreciated, how it's appreciated, the fact that we invite that kind of input, but that sometimes there are reasons why we don't do things that way. And as people talking about making bills in Congress, you don't want to see how they're done because it's an ugly process. Sometimes board discussions are an ugly process. And there's really, other than trying to create background information for people to prepare to come to a meeting, and I think you'll agree with me, and I hope I'm not disparaging anybody, but most of the time the background materials aren't read as thoroughly as we would probably like them to be read. And we have to point things out when we give agenda books or when we prepared the policy manuals, or we always routinely posted all the minutes from previous meetings that people could read if they wanted to. It's important to have those facts sort of at your fingertips to be able to, as efficiently as possible, indicate that always your input is welcome. We appreciate your input, but here's what we discussed last time about this. Has anything changed? It's just by the nature of humanity, it's not always a smooth process. I wish I had some great secret for you to say, well, we can just cut everything out. You can try to run it as a dictator, but what happens at that point when you say, well, I just don't want to hear about that anymore, what happens is you start to not only put a downward pressure on input, which is why the board's there, is to try to provide input in terms of what the priorities of the association should be. You also start creating some hard feelings. While objective fact, so I'm going to make my controversial statement today, objective fact should probably overrule feelings for the most part. But the simple fact of the matter is hard feelings make it very difficult for anything to get done. And so to the extent that you can create an inviting environment that tries to be as efficient as possible in terms of discussions of things going on, but also make some progress moving forward, that's, in my estimation, the best use of a board's time. I have not seen too many successful dictators running in associations. And that's just from my perspective. What I see when that starts to happen is boards get angry, committees get angry, members get angry, and you start to create a lot of tumult that you could have avoided, not you, Ron, but a person could have avoided by handling the situation a little differently.
You know, as we're talking, I realize what you're saying has equal value to the Congress, for example, or national-level politics. You see the hard feelings come out, and then things get stuck.
Right, exactly.
And you, as a staff position, and the government also has administrators, as you know, and you've studied how people think, how can you help people get unstuck? Do you have any secrets for that?
Well, I think that if you understand what's motivating a person, whether you're understanding their agenda, you're understanding their background, that helps shape the way they look at an issue, you can sometimes provide a rationale that sort of fits within their perspective, and I find that we can be a lot more effective in terms of getting people off the dime by explaining things from a perspective that they can understand. Now, sometimes it doesn't work. I wish I had 100% across the board. Wow, this is going to work every time. It's not. We're human beings. Things don't always work the way they should. We don't live in a normative universe in many ways. But I do find that if you can identify the perspective a person's coming from and speak in terms of how to best address what concerns might arise from that perspective, you often make a lot more headway in terms of moving the discussion forward. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense, and it resonates with what we do clinically as therapists. You know, we meet the patient where they're at and work from that as opposed to, oh, this is right or wrong, and this is why I think you're wrong. But I think it makes a lot of sense.
Right.
Yeah, interesting. So, I'm looking back to my year as president and what happened. I'll describe what happened, and then maybe we could talk together how I might have handled differently, or maybe I would have done the same thing. So what happened my year as president, the year before, the board had worked hard on revising how education will be administered through our association, ASH. And when the board came to a vote about whether to approve this new method of education, there was only one dissenting vote. And I voted against this new change because I thought we were doing it too hastily. And I didn't think we thought about all the ramifications of it. But the board wanted to pass this new way of doing it because they feared, you know, we'd worked on it for the whole year, and if we went to another year and boards would have turned over, the fear was, well, it will just die in water. So this vote passed. And I'll continue this story after the break. And this is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Unvar.
Make-A-Wish has been granting life-changing wishes for children and families for over 40 years. A wish is something that gives children the opportunity to look outside their illness and restore a sense of childhood back to the child. With the help of donors and more than 43,000 worldwide volunteers, Make-A-Wish has collectively granted more than 520,000 wishes worldwide. Dr. Anbar has referred many patients to Make-A-Wish. To make a donation, go to worldwish.org. That's worldwish.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Coming attraction, life guide for teens harnessing your inner power to be healthy, happy, and confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Ambar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Ambar. Special guest is Dr. John Casper, my dear friend. We work together on the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis Executive Board for many years, and I'm just relating a story about how the board, before I became president, voted to move forward with a new education initiative that I was against, but the board passed it. So then came my year as president, new board that I think probably half of the people had turned over at that point. And even though I disagreed with the plan of the new educational policy, I thought I should carry it out, because if I could say, well, I'm president now, so I'm going to veto it, that didn't seem quite right. So I moved forward, and the board then picked somebody to take charge of this new educational plan, who turned out to be, who's not a member of the board, turned out to be very much against the plan and spent half a year trying to subterfuge it to make it not work. And I sort of, for the first half year of my presidency, I sort of fought him, quote unquote. This is somebody who I respected professionally, who got me going in the society, but we were on opposite sides of the political divide. And then the mid-year, I talked to all the board members before the meeting to make sure I was not going to be surprised by what they decided. And we decided to install a different person in that position. And that person moved the ball a little bit further, but had more politics involved. And then the following year, when I was no longer president, the next person just sacked the whole thing and jettison out the window. So it was, to me, in retrospect, it was a giant waste of time and energy, because I could have put energy into something I believed in more. So going back now, it's more than a decade, a lot of people aren't involved anymore. What could I have done differently? Your input, and I'll reflect back.
Sure. Well, first of all, sometimes there's not much you could have done, because the clear direction of the vast majority of the board at that time was to move forward with that outside person to try to take a different direction for the association. I think you did your level best to explain potentially what some of the issues were, or were potentially. I think, as I recall, I had explained what some of the potential issues were going to be as well as we were moving forward, because it almost split the responsibility and made it very unclear at times in terms of how that was going to work and what would happen if this happened, what would happen if that happened. So I think that from my perspective, you did your level best to try to explain why they should think about it a little bit more. But when you've got, 10 people, 11 people saying, we really ought to go this way, I'm not sure what more you could have done. I think what happened the year after, because they had a year of experience, at least half the board had a year of experience of what was going on with the person in that position, and the the issues that had arisen, which both of us had actually talked to the previous board about, I think the next president's ability to move forward with getting eliminating that particular program were made much easier. Sometimes experience is the best teacher. Unfortunately, it took a year to get that experience for the association, and it was a year that we could have spent doing some other things as well. But I don't know that you could have done too much more in regard to trying to point out what some of those issues are. Sometimes an association has to live through a bad idea in order to right the ship, if you will. So I'm not sure I would lose a lot of sleep over you did something wrong. I don't think you did anything wrong. I think at that point there wasn't much to be done to avoid the creation of a situation that in and of itself would not necessarily serve the association well over the short period of time. And I think it was experience that taught the association that that was not going to work.
That's very interesting. Again, it reflects, I think, you back to therapy. I'll tell patients, go ahead and do something, and one of two things will happen. It'll work, great, or it won't work, and that's great, too, because you'll learn that that's where it doesn't work, and you'll come out ahead. That's mm-hmm. really what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah. And as far as what my role, well, I could talk ahead of time. This is what could happen. But then once we decided, my role was to continue and let the experience unfold, if you would.
Exactly.
From my perspective, it felt a little bit like, I remember in 10th grade, this was back in the 70s, we had a social studies class. We had the mini legislature, and I suggested at the time that the draft dodgers who were in Canada, this is during the Vietnam War era, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. they should be allowed to come back as long as they did 2 years of service to the country, but not in war. So mm-hmm. I proposed the bill, and then it was amended by my class. This was in California, a very liberal place. They removed the criteria that they had to give service to the country. They just could come back. And they said, oh, no, I don't want that bill.
Something has changed here.
So that was an early taste of legislation that I had.
Indeed.
So we've talked about, I think, two important concepts here. One, that when you want to help change people's minds or have them realize more what the options are, you got to work from their frame of reference. I think that's mm-hmm. really important. And the second mm-hmm. really important point we talked about is that sometimes associations or people need to go through a difficult time to realize this is not the right way.
And mm-hmm. I think that's fair.
To embrace that experience as opposed to maybe refrain from doing it. Go ahead.
Well, and to not focus so much on, for example, that one particular program, but to make sure that you continue to work to further the association's agenda on other issues as you're going forward, and to try to ameliorate any major issues that may be arising because of that decision, to make sure the association, to diminish the pain, if you will, as best you can as you're moving forward. You don't want to get so focused on a negative that you forget that 95% of the agenda is still moving forward.
Got it. So let's take a hypothetical case. You're the association manager staff, and
okay.
this, of course, didn't happen in my association, but let's say there's a leader who is going way off in the pasture, and you're seeing that they're having difficulty, and if they keep going their direction, it's going to be bad for the association that you're managing. I guess this is going to be a long answer, so we'll maybe pick it up right after the break. But what do you do? How do you talk? I guess one thing you can do is talk within that leader's frame of reference, but suppose that doesn't do much. I'm really curious if you ever faced that, and how did you use your knowledge of psychology to deal with that situation. We'll ask the question. We'll be right back after these messages to hear your answer. This is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Unber.
More than 30,000 children and adults of every race and ethnic group in the U.S. have cystic fibrosis. Cystic fibrosis is a disease causing long-lasting lung infections, limiting the ability to breathe over time. Dr. Anbar participated in research that helped advance survival of cystic fibrosis patients by more than 20 years. He encourages you to donate to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation to help find a cure. It's easy to donate. Go to cff.org. That's cff.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com. or visit dranbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Anbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At CenterPoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California, and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to CenterPoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. A special guest, Dr. John Casper, my dear friend, will help me get out of a lot of tight spots in my years on American Society of Clinical Hypnosis Executive Board. But before the break, I posed the question, what have you ever encountered a leader who was going off the farm and you're trying to retrieve him back? Has that happened to you?
Yes. Yes, it has.
How did you handle it?
It's a two-pronged approach. The first thing, I've always believed in talking directly to the person when something like that has happened. And so there would be quite a few personal one-on-one calls with the individual, trying to explain to them, first of all, what I was seeing, why I thought it may be bad for the association to pursue that sort of activity. Now, this is, of course, assuming that the actions they're taking are not illegal, immoral, or unethical, in which I would not participate in any way, shape, or form, but just in a bad direction for the association. If it turns out that the individual just rejects that advice and tells me to go away, it's none of my business, I would then elicit the support of an executive committee on their board and talk to them about what I was seeing and the potential pitfalls and downsides to what could happen to the association, and try to have some peer pressure put on that individual to kind of get back in line with what was going on with the association. It's unfortunately made a lot easier if it's an illegal activity, because then I simply refuse to do it and have legal counsel get in touch with them. If it's a questionable ethical issue, there are ethics committees on most of the associations that I work with that after talking to the executive committee, if it didn't work, I would raise the issue with the ethics committee. Happily, most of the time, after I've had a discussion with the individual, the ship has been, for the most part, righted. Now, I'm not going to say that every time I've ever talked to a person, I've magically persuaded them to do whatever I wanted to do, because that's just not true in any way, shape, or form. But it's not my job to make them do something I want them to do. It's my job to help them see what's best for the association in an activity. And that's where my approach to association management may be a little different than other chief staff executives' approach to association management might be, where they believe they're in charge of the association and they are directing things. I have never believed that as an association manager. It's always the members' association, not mine, to direct and run. My job is to convince, persuade, cajole, try to get it best for the association as the direction moves forward.
Did anybody ever threaten to fire you if you persisted?
Oh, yeah. And in fact, I have been let go from an association because they did not like the way I was suggesting them to do things. Employment in associations, especially as you get higher in the organization, whether it's a chief staff executive or a chief operating officer, is a little slipperier than a typical corporation. Often, as you get boards moving in and out, and you get people who aren't familiar with you as a chief staff executive, people who haven't worked with you as much in the past as others, there's more of a chance that if enough people decide they don't like you for whatever reason, you can be gone. And it sounds a little whimsical and a little scary, and it is. Until you think about it and then you understand what situation you're in. It's not that I look forward to getting fired from any particular job, but it has happened in my career where we have parted ways.
Yeah. I can tell you that since you left ASH, I left the board about the same time you left, but I've seen ASH through two different associations or association management companies, and there's different styles, and I fear that, well, I shouldn't say too much, but I like your management style. Let's start with that.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's sometimes, I don't want to say it's an old-fashioned management style, but as I am getting a little older, it may be a product of my upbringing and how I believe things ought to work as well. I don't want to speak down towards people who have a different view of association management, but I'm most comfortable and true to the vision that if you're paying dues and you're a member of an association, it ought to be the members running the association, not the staff.
Correct. I agree with you. So let me ask, this is our last thing, we just have a few minutes left, but I often ask our guests for three lessons that from their experience that can be applied in life. You really gave us two. One lesson was sometimes you have to work through a difficult time, and that's an okay thing to do. The second lesson we talked about earlier is that you want to talk to people who might not have the same opinion from their frame of reference. Do you have a third lesson or maybe even a fourth to add?
I think patience is way undervalued in today's society. I think the need for immediate gratification and the need for everything to work exactly the way you want it to work the first time through may be overstated. I think you need to be patient with people as you work through this process. Now, there are people who have said I'm maybe too patient with people and take too long to work with them. I know my staff always used to chide me a little bit when I would answer the phone, because another principle for mine is humans ought to interact with humans. So that could be number four. A lot of associations that I've worked with, you know, create these phone trees so that you never have to talk to a human being. You can just leave a message. I believe if a person calls, They ought to talk to you as a human being. They ought to be treated with respect, and they ought to be treated as a person who about whose interests we care. But that's number four. So number three, the patience issue, when I would answer the phone sometimes, because in our office, all the phones rang when somebody called. It didn't matter what client it was. The client showed up on the phone, and I wanted that phone answered within two rings by a human being. And sometimes people were busy, so I would pick up the phone. And my staff would chide me because I would spend a half an hour on the phone with a person talking to them about what they were looking to have done and try to figure out how to best help them. And they would say, why do you spend so much time with people? I said, because they're people. They have interest. They are paying dues to our association for service. And you need to be patient with them as they try to explain what it is they're looking for and what their issue is. And I had very few unhappy people by the time I was through dealing with them, which I take a great pride in.
Patience. Well, it is wonderful to reflect back with you on our years that we worked together. Actually, we first worked together in, I think it was 2003 or something, so even.
That could be, yeah.
And I remember the first thing that happened was I was giving a talk for ASH in New Orleans, and I wanted to go away for a meeting and get a honorarium for giving another lecture, and you raised the question, well, I'm on there on Ash's dime, is that ethical? And at that point, I didn't quite like that, but it was a good question, and the board should have considered it. That was my first inkling of you way before I served on the board. So, John, I really appreciate you. I appreciate our friendship, and I thank you for teaching us about associate management and some of the intricacies in running them.
Well, and I really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you again, Ron. I miss you to this day.
Likewise. Everyone, have a great week. This is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Unber.